I think that as I look at those and evaluate those, to me it becomes a threat assessment model, meaning if I was asked to look at those kinds of events, or let me put it this way, JJ, whenever I was looking at an attack that took place, I would always say, you know, what was known 24 hours ahead of time about the potential threat or the potential target, and kind of walk back the cat from there. And I think that those are the kinds of things that the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces and are doing a good job of evaluating, you know, after a Pulse nightclub, what happens to these kinds of cases, you know, critiquing whether or not certain things were missed, or looking for the needles in those haystacks to see what could we have done differently. And I'm very optimistic, knowing the U.S. intelligence community, that they're quite good at policing themselves when it comes to that, they do look at these things. So I think what everybody's after at the end of the day is that holy grail, that there's you know, one ability to say that we have this off-the-shelf program that's going to identify the next Pulse nightclub shooter or the Las Vegas shooter. But in reality, it's not there. So I think that gets back to just the reasonable expectation on the part of everybody that, look, you're not going to stop them all, but we're certainly going to learn from those attacks once they do occur and try to prevent the next one from happening.
Washington, D.C., how big of a threat, how big of a target is it today, and has it changed any since the last couple of years?
I think the threat to Washington has been persistent and constant, JJ, since I was back inside the city, you know, from the early 80s on up into the late 90s, meaning perception-wise, you know, an attack inside the Beltway would resonate around the world. It's viewed as the seat of world power. It's viewed as the command and control center for the so-called war on terror. So I think that this is a city that will always be in the gun sights of terrorist organizations, much like New York City. But I think that D.C. and New York City are prepared to contain an attack pretty quickly. That's a positive thing.
As we look at the coming year, because we're almost at the end of this one, knowing what you know about the tactics we've seen, also knowing about the state of the Islamic State group, also knowing what we know about the possible and likely resurgence of Al-Qaeda and the other terror groups that are out there, where is it that the West, law enforcement community, intelligence communities around the world, in fact, where is it that there are vulnerabilities and situations and issues that you don't believe have been addressed as we face the next wave or the next challenge from terrorism?
Well, first, I think Western Europe has a much bigger problem than we do here in the United States. I think that just due to the sheer volume of potential jihadis, Islamic State members, Al-Qaeda sympathizers, whatever, they simply are tasked with pushing a boulder up a hill. I think that inside the U.S., we're blessed by just not having that volume of potential suspects. I think that the one thing that I think always befuddles the U.S., or at least I can speak firsthand to that, is that I'm a firm believer that without human intelligence, a lot of these attacks cannot be stopped. In fact, I would venture to go so far to say that you know, the reason that most of these attacks are successful is that lack of human intelligence. But you know, that problem has been in existence since you know, the creation of the Bureau of Secret Intelligence in 1916 by the State Department, and certainly one that's long recognized, even with the development of the OSS. So if you could develop more human sources, That clearly is should be the number one objective, but I know that that's easier said than done.
Fred Burton, Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor and former State Department Diplomatic Security Executive. J.J. Green, WTOP News.